is Pull Yourself Together with E. Shaver Booksellers.
Hello, I'm Jessica, a lifelong lover of books, wide-ranging reader, fan of obscure British literature, all things Douglas Adams, long sentences, music biographies, the Oxford comma, always up for travel, except during COVID, and of course, Jane Austen.
And I'm Melissa, an eclectic bibliophile and all-around nerd who also loves Jane Austen, comics, and cooking. Together, we run an independent bookstore in Savannah, Georgia. Each episode, we discuss the books we've been reading and recommend.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hi. So we're back, as planned.
Yes, and it remains hot.
It does.
And really wet.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
The Olympics have started.
Yes.
So I'm actually glad they started at the end of this month as opposed to at the end of last month, because this is pretty much all I've been doing for the past three mm-hmm. days is watching the Olympics nonstop. Like, I literally got up at like 8:30, turned them on. They were on all day. I'm watching the most obscure sports ever. I've become quite the expert in rugby sevens and also water polo.
So I was just going to say, I watched an inordinate amount of water polo the other day. I was thinking, damn, I should have played water polo when I was young.
I'm just saying, look,
it's like fun.
You're literally churning water the whole time. Like, mm-hmm. you can't touch the bottom.
Nope.
It's like wrestling and swimming and rugby.
Yeah.
Had a baby. It's
made it even more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Flava Flav was there to cheer on his girls, which was very excited.
Yes.
I was having a discussion with my husband about whether or not he needed to change the time on his clock to reflect the new time zone he was in.
Mm-hmm. And what was the decision?
I mean, I would assume yes, because, like, what's the point of wearing a clock around your neck if it's the wrong time?
It could be your hometown time.
Well, he could have two, so, like, local time and New York time.
It's true.
Yeah.
But we digress.
Yeah, so anyway, the Olympics are getting in the way of my reading time.
So I recently had some eye surgery and have only been able to listen to books because it's been hard for me to read. And for those of you who listen to books, I love listening to books, but it just takes more time. So I'm only going to briefly talk about one book that I don't want to spoil for anybody, but I have been anticipating for quite some time.
Yes, and then Jenny, our GM, is going to pinch hit for Jessica for the rest of the podcast.
Yes, because she's actually read some things this month.
And it's been cute because she's been super frothy and nervous about doing this.
There's no pressure. For our, you know, thousands of listeners out there, Jenny's going to be great.
For the two of you in Belgium, thank you.
Yes. All right. So, without further ado, I'm going to talk about Deborah Harkness's new book, The Blackbird Oracle, which just came out. So I gave it a listen right after I had my surgery, but I realized, because I was taking some painkillers and other things, that I hadn't fully ingested it.
So, no, you don't say.
So I gave it a second listen.
Oh,
and
okay.
And that really has made all the difference. And so it is not necessarily the story I wanted, but I can see how I feel really hopeful and positive that she's got the next book in the queue, because this is
a gateway book.
Yeah, it's a gateway book. It is. I feel like maybe she's going to do another trilogy where the books all work together in the same story arc, because this book goes into, it's 7 years later, and Diana and Matthew are settling into married life with their twins. Everybody else's life is moving along. Diana is teaching, and then they go back to England to do research in the summer and let the kids see the rest of the family. And then they're living most of their lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Suddenly, a murder of crows, a flock of blackbirds, a large group of birds show up. A rook of ravens show up on Diana's front doorstep as she's going in, getting ready to leave for the summer with Rebecca, her daughter. And they have a message for her. And so the book goes from there. We end up going up to Salem, Massachusetts, and I'm blanking on the name of it, Ipswich, and where she becomes fully enmeshed in the Proctor side of the family, which we don't hear anything about. Well, we don't hear much about at all. Stephen's side of the family, her father's side of the family, in the initial series. So the book goes from there, and it puts Diana on a different path and her children on a different path. You don't hear as much from Matthew in this book, but I have a feeling that it's all going to tie back together in the next book about how all these families have been connected since way back when Philippe was still pulling the strings. So,
all right. I have not read any of those books, so all of those words were meaningless to me, but yes. I'm very happy you're happy.
Yes, I am happy. Yes. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's definitely worth it. If you are weirdly involved in this series like I have become, then yes.
Yes. Yes. Deeply involved in this series.
A lot. A lot. Yes. I don't know why this is the one that spoke to me, but thank you, Deborah Harkness, for giving me much needed relief from the world when I have really needed it in the past, like since 2020. Thank you.
Repeatedly, over and over again.
You know, the world has been extremely unpredictable.
I'm aware. I've been there.
Yeah. And I like coming home to something predictable. These books are not predictable, but
well,
they are now.
You've listened to them 10 times.
It's true. Well, you know, I feel like they may fall into my sort of like rereading of Tolkien or Pride and Prejudice or one of those that I like to revisit in times of stress or when I just need an old friend. I am a rereader, so these now fall into that category of my comfort books.
Very good.
Yes, but I'm also exciting when new ones come out because, yeah, it's awesome. Keep it up, Deborah. We love you. All right. And now I'm going to hand it over to Jenny, who's going to do an amazing job. And I will talk to you next month when I will have read more because it's August. And in August, we get to read books.
Yeah, it's Bookseller Freedom Month. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Melissa.
Welcome. So, you know, it's not scary, I promise. You'll be fine.
Sure, okay.
We talk about books all the time. It's essentially, you know, what we're doing here.
It's true.
Okay. Well, I'm going to jump in and talk about something I've read and give you a minute to enjoy the hot seat over there.
Cool.
And then we'll go from there. Okay, so the first one I'm going to talk about, I'm going to try and talk about it in a way that does not give much to anything away about it because this has been on Jenny's TBR list and I don't want to ruin it for her.
Yeah, I need to move it up now.
Yeah. So it's called Pet and it's by Catherine Chidji, I think is how you say it. She's a writer from New Zealand and I've never actually read a writer from New Zealand before that I can think of off the top of my head. But this has been on my shelf for a while and I was like, I'm going to pick that up and read it. So basically the story goes back and forth between 2014 and 1984 and the main character is named Justine and she is 11 in 1984 and she has a seizure disorder, which I think is epilepsy, and they were hoping she would grow out of it so that she wouldn't need to be medicated anymore, but that hasn't happened. And her mother died the year before, so it's just her and her dad. And she is really good friends with, and I can't remember her name, but she's the only Asian student in her school. Like, so the two of them are friends, and they're not really popular. They're just kind of the kids in the class are, you know, there's the hierarchies of school. You know what I'm talking about. So they have a teacher whose name is Mrs. Price, and Mrs. Price is younger. She dresses really nice. The kids are sort of fascinated by her. Her husband and daughter died in a car accident, which has led her to move to their town, and she started teaching at their school. But Mrs. Price has a tendency to pick teachers' pets in her class, and that's where the name of the book comes from. But she gives these kids special jobs and special attention, and she seemingly kind of picks them at random, and they're her pet for a while, and then they're not the chosen one anymore. So when the book starts, Justine has this pen, which is the pen that's on the cover of the book, that her mother has given to her. And it's just a souvenir from a fairy. And it's one of those pens where, like, if you tilt it, like, the thing moves in it. So there's, like, a boat that moves back and forth. And it's her special pen because it was her mother's. And so she uses it when they're going to have any sort of tests, that, so, because it's lucky. And so she had pulled the pen out in class to show it to another student. And then when it's time for this test that they're taking, she can't find it. So she freezes and she doesn't write anything down on the test. So after school, the teacher calls her to the desk to talk to her about what happened. And she tells her, you know, about the pen and her mother dying. And that makes her interesting to Mrs. Price. And so she becomes the new teacher's pet. The story goes along, and of course, her being the pet causes friction between her and her friend because there's growing distance. She becomes interesting to the more popular kids, so she gets invited places. So things then start missing in the classroom. Like, lots of kids start missing things. Someone is stealing stuff. And it kind of goes from there, and there's something much darker under the surface. It's a very good sort of psychological book. It does go a little dark.
Which I like.
Dark is good. It just kind of went unexpectedly very dark. And I was like, whoa, hey, that happened. I think it's incredibly well done. I think the tension is great in it. I think the characters are really interesting. So I would highly recommend it. It's called Pet, Catherine Chigi.
I love the cover.
Yeah, I love this cover too. Like, it's very simple, but it, like, there's something about it that draws me in.
Yeah.
It's also put out by Europa, which I love Europa's books. Like, when Europa does a good book, they do a really good book.
Yeah.
So, all right, Jenny, what you got?
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay.
So this weekend I read a Savannah base book.
Okay.
A Cold Night for Alligators.
Okay.
By Viggy Parhampton, who, side note, I was in the airport waiting for my breakfast, and I'm reading this book, and my breakfast comes, and I sit it down, and then this older couple next to me goes, "Look, honey, look what she's reading." And I go, "It's horror." And they're like, "Oh no, we live next door to that author."
Oh, that's fun.
And so they had me take a picture with the book and sent it to her.
You're famous.
Right? Anyways.
Weird things happen in airports. Like, just
so many weird things in the airports happen.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So it's definitely Savannah based, and it ties in with Atlanta. And they notice, the CDC notices that there is an epidemic happening in Savannah. And it's drug-related and kind of creepy because, one, I've never done any drugs, so I don't know the effects of black tar heroin.
That is shocking because when I look at you, I think heroin user.
Correct. Absolutely. So there's this, like, Gruber is his last name, which then just made me think of Die Hard for some reason, which I don't think that guy's name is Gruber in Die Hard.
Isn't it Hans Gruber?
Is it?
Like Alan Rickman's character?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
So me in my head.
It's Alan Rickman. Right? I mean, it could be worse.
I just think of it as Alan Rickman. So in my head, it is actually drama and police scandal and kind of heist, but it's not. It's horror, for sure. So the guy, Gruber, decides that he's going to solve the epidemic that is happening. And he's pretty smart. He's a lonesome, kind of loner guy. He doesn't get along with anybody in the CDC, which I'm like, I could feel this guy's energy. Like, and he's just trying to prove himself because he gets passed over and passed over for promotions because he's not a people person. And the higher up you go, you have to be more of a people pleaser and a people person versus like doing what you came into something to do.
Yeah, right? That's more political. You have to play the game.
Right, and he can't play the game. So he goes to Savannah. He calls in sick. It's the first time he's ever called in sick, so it already has sprung some red flags for his boss. He gets to Savannah. He stays at the DeSoto. He reads all of the paperwork in Madison Square. So I'm like, okay, I can feel this.
For those of you not in Savannah, Madison Square is the square that the bookstore is on. And the DeSoto is literally right across the street from us. Yep. So it's, definitely a home sort of book.
It was, even though I was traveling this weekend, it felt like I was still here because it literally right there in Madison Square. Anyways. So he's reading everything, and he finds an Uber to take him to Gully Watchers amusement park, which is not a real amusement park in Savannah.
I was like, I don't know what that is.
That was like, if I had to say for the whole book, that was the only made-up part of Savannah.
Okay.
Even though it would be pretty cool if we had an amusement park, but not this amusement park.
Yeah, I feel like amusement parks and books that are horror are not places you want to be.
No, absolutely not. So it's not an active amusement park. It has been run down for about 15 years. And in this 15 years time period, people who go and do urban exploration just kind of disappear from the park.
It's like the Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm, kind of, but in Savannah. So he goes, the cab driver has noticed what's happening and what's coming out of the amusement park. And I don't want to give anything away because the horror part of it is pretty solid. And it took off pretty quickly after all of the characters were introduced, which overall, I thought there was one too many sets of characters in it. But it made sense for the story, but I just kept getting them all confused in my head.
Okay.
So the cab driver knows what's coming out of it, right? And so he asks Gruber, well, what are you going there for? And he's like, oh, you know, just checking it out, whatever. He doesn't want to give anything away and who he works for. And he's like, well, how much are you looking to buy? And he's like, buy? He goes, yeah. Don't you know what's coming out of there? You know, so he's in it. He charges a commission for you to go there. He charges himself the price of what's coming out of there. And he'll wait for you when you're ready to leave the park sometimes.
Yeah, anyways, if you get to leave.
If you get to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think it is a perfect story for coming up into fall and spooky season. If you come to Savannah and you want a Savannah spooky story, they talk about an imaginary ghost story out of the DeSoto.
Jenny's doing air quotes for those of you who can't see, which is all of you.
It's ridiculous. It is kind of creepy, and I do tend to like stories with abandoned amusement parks. I love Hyde by Kirsten White, and this one is definitely different from that evil that's in that book, but the evil kind of fits the South.
Okay.
Anyways, Cold Night for Alligators, Figgy Parhampton.
Okay. Well, so I'm going to use the CDC as a segue. Not that it plays into this next book at all, but CDC, zombies, Walking Dead.
Same thing.
Yeah. Okay, so for this month's reading challenge, it was to read a book that you DNF'd, which if you listened to the last episode, you know this was going to be a challenge for me because I do not DNF books. So I didn't have one for that. So next month's challenge is to read a book that's been on your TBR for more than a year. So I'm just going to do that twice. So that's why I picked up this book, because this has been on my TBR for a long time. So it's by Colson Whitehead, and it's called Zone One. And it is Colson Whitehead's zombie novel.
Which you knew.
Yeah, like, doesn't...
I mean, doesn't seem like Colson Whitehead, but it is a very, very literary zombie novel. I would say you should go into it kind of expecting almost like Cormac McCarthy's The Road, but with zombies. It's got that sort of feeling. It's very slow moving, very reflective, not a lot of action in it. There are some action moments, but that's not really what it's about. So obviously there's a zombie apocalypse that has happened. This is sort of set after the world is trying to rebuild, right? So they've gotten rid of a lot of like the hordes of zombies. The military has taken out a lot of zombies, and now they have these resettlement camps, but they're trying to go into areas and basically clear out anything that's left so they can move people back into residential areas and really start kind of rebuilding what's going on. So this is set over 3 days, and it follows a guy, and they call him Mark Spitz, like the swimmer, but that's not his actual name, and you never get what his actual name is in the book. And it explains why they call him that, and I'm not going to ruin that because it's kind of a funny story. But so it follows Mark, and he is a part of a civilian team that they call sweepers. And so basically what's happened is the military has cleared out New York of like the large groups of zombies. So now he is part of this civilian team, and their job is to go in and literally go through every single building zone by zone and clear out any sort of dead bodies that may still be in buildings, dead pets, any zombie stragglers. So there are the kind of horde zombies, but then there are these zombies that sort of get stuck in a place that's kind of important to them, like they're drawn to it for some reason, and they don't attack, they're just stuck there. It's really interesting, and they can't figure out why that is, because it's like 99% of the zombies are like the horde, and then there's just like this 1% that is a little bit different. So their job is to clear all of those out with the idea of making the city safe again for people to move back in. And in the course of this, you've got him and his team kind of doing their job, but then there's a lot of flashing back to how Mark got to where he is from when the last night started. And I also just air quoted.
Yep. You're welcome.
Yeah. So it's, it kind of gives you an idea of more of what the world is like and how people were affected by this. But then you also get kind of the modern day, like what's happening. And, it's more of a than I would say more than a zombie story. It's more of kind of a meditation or reflection of how people are dealing with, they call it PASD in the book, like post-apocalyptic stress disorder. And it's interesting because they all deal with it in very different ways. And so as the story goes, you get a sense of where Mark is kind of psychologically, and then things start to unravel as the story goes on. But it's really, really good. If you've read Colson Whitehead, you're familiar with the way that he writes, and it's beautiful, and it's a very intelligent, not like pop culture-y zombie book. It's just very, very well done.
Which you would expect.
Yeah. I mean, it's Colson Whitehead. I would expect that. That's the reason why when I walk near Colson Whitehead, I go, and that's literally happened to me. So.
I like dystopian books that are happening during like the fall of a society, but I find the afterwards those stories way more interesting in how people rebuild and how different jobs are made. Like, I find that storytelling a good addition to it.
Well, and that's one of the things that I actually really liked about The Walking Dead, because The Walking Dead was not really so much about the zombies as it was about how humanity is dealing with it and also how they treat each other.
Right.
And yeah, I find that to be really interesting. Like, I think the rebuilding part of it is kind of fascinating. And again, it was one of the reasons that I loved Station 11. Yeah. Like, so yeah, if you enjoyed those kind of books, I think you would enjoy Zone 1.
And the cover's also very nice.
Yeah, it is a good cover too. Just all kinds of good covers over here.
It is. I just have my notes written on a piece of paper because I'm a note taker.
Well, you can actually remember what you read, though. So, like, this, I have to have props so I know what I'm talking about.
That's because you read three times as many books as I do.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do Tell It to Me Singing by Tita Ramirez, which I would never have picked up.
Okay.
Unless this ARC had been sent to me. It came out on July the 9th. And I don't think... And the cover is beautiful, but it wouldn't have, like, grabbed my attention at all unless this rep was like, here, you want to read it? And I have a hard time saying no. And I was like, yes. And then, like, my first email, like, sentence in my email to her was, I'm so glad you sent this to me because I would have never picked it up otherwise.
Okay.
It's fiction, but it is literally telenovela style fiction.
Oh, interesting.
So it's Cuban American family. And I think I read it in 2 days, which, you know, that I don't typically read that fast.
Yeah.
But I couldn't put it down. I read it on my 2 days off, months ago, but, it really felt like I was just watching TV.
Okay.
The drama was good. The structure of the family style of Cuban Americans. And I don't think I have any Cuban American friends, but, like, I felt like I could understand their culture more and how important everybody is in the family and the dynamics of mother-daughter relationships, which is hard in anybody's. But I feel like there's this different bond with Cuban mothers and daughters.
Okay.
I'm also using my hands a lot. I am sorry that you all cannot see this. I am a very hand talker as I throw them up in the air again. And the daughters, I didn't write down their names, but the daughter's life almost exactly mirrors the mother's life. Their love stories are the same. Their love triangles are the same. Their unexpected pregnancies happen almost the same exact way. And so the story opens. The mother's about to have heart surgery, and she's had a secret her whole life. And right, right?
That is very telenovela.
It is, right? She literally is about to fall asleep from the anesthesia, and she just says, Juan is your real father. And then she goes to sleep.
Oh, my.
Right? And so the whole time while she's recovering from surgery, the daughter is trying to figure it out and is trying to figure out if her mom was just, like, lucid and just, like, repeating something she saw on the TV, because every Friday they watch their stories together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of literary mystery. They end up at a drug dealer's house.
There's a lot of drugs in what you're reading.
It is. I just put that together. The next book I'm talking about does not have drugs, but then the book I picked for reading challenge this month does have drugs.
Okay, so I'm seeing a theme, and I may need to get Jenny into a program.
Maybe. We'll talk to Skimple Shakes tomorrow. I really love this book. I thought her pacing was perfect, and I feel like it... Everything about it mirrored a telenovela series where the drama was over the top, but and unexpected, but it oddly resolved itself so nicely in a little bow. And it really is talking about how daughters are trying to live up to expectations of their mothers, and then mothers are holding their daughters, especially the only daughter or the firstborn daughter, at this higher level and expect so much more. Because everything with the daughter, and I truly wish I had remembered to write her name down, her life is in shambles right now. Her job is not going well. She got pregnant by this guy she kind of likes, but doesn't really like, because she's still in love with her past boyfriend. And so it's just a lot of things I think readers could relate to and laugh while watching it, because you can't believe the amount of unexpected, like, I just don't have that kind of drama in my life, in like my family life, where I'm, my mother has run away and I have to go find her in Cuba. And I don't know anything about Cuba because I've never been.
I really want to go to Cuba so badly.
Oh, I'd love to eat there.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely. There is a lot of drugs in it.
Well, I'm
thinking about it, but Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I do have it in my staff pick. I put it in there cause I just think it would be a really fun summer read. Mm-hmm. And going to Cuba without having to actually like go to Cuba if you can't afford to go to Cuba.
No,
I don't know. It was a really fun story.
Cool. All right. So the next one that I have was also a very fun story. But very, very different from where Jenny just was. So we have had at the shop in various and sundry incarnations and different times, a sci-fi and fantasy book club. And we haven't had one for a while, but now we have started back up again. So July was our first sci-fi and fantasy book club meeting. And so the book that we picked for that is called Space Opera by Catherine Valente. The tagline on the front of the book is, "In space, everyone can hear you sing." it was interesting because Morgan, who is the bookseller that is doing the sci-fi and fantasy book club with me, when we were trying to pick out books for it, we each made a list of things that we thought would be good, and then we send it to the other person. And we both had a book by Catherine Valente on our list. Okay. Because we had both read, she has a young readers series called The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland. It's in something, and it's a much longer title, but that series is really great. But this one is, I'm going to preface this by saying that this one is not a book, even though it's, the premise of it is kind of fun and light. It's not a book that you can really pick up and read, like, if something else is going on or if you're kind of zoned out, or it's not something, because the narration in this book is so, so fast, and there's a lot happening. She took a lot of, influence from Douglas Adams and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And it's very evident in the narration of it, but she makes you work for it. Like, you have to be paying attention to it, and it totally pays off because it's a lot of fun. But the premise of this book is that there has been sort of a large war amongst civilizations in space, and they have decided that instead of just continuing to fight and decimate each other, that they're going to form this sort of coalition where they will share resources, but every year there is a competition that they call the Metagalactic Grand Prix, and all sentient species have to compete in this contest, and it is a singing contest. So they send, so she based this off of Eurovision and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So it's like an intergalactic Eurovision competition. And they also bring new species into it to prove that they're sentient and to prove that they should be a member of this coalition. And that's what happens in this, is the humans on Earth, it's decided that we have to prove whether or not we're sentient and are competing in this. And so when
the alien contact comes to Earth to tell humans that this is happening, they have a whole list of performers that they think should be the people who are the people competing in this. And their top choice is Yoko Ono, who unfortunately at the time that this book is happening has passed away, so not available to participate, because Yoko could have saved us all.
She could have.
But the last group on the list is a group called Decibel Jones and the Absolute Zeros. And Decibel Jones is basically like a like Ziggy Stardust, David Bowie kind of figure. And there were two other people in the band. One of them has also passed away, so it's only the two of them left, and they haven't spoken for years.
Oh my God.
And Des is trying to remain a rock star. In book club, we were talking about who we pictured as Des. And even though he's, I believe he's Pakistani, but he's British, but I think of Pakistani heritage, all of us pictured him as Bill Nighy from, Love Actually, like that kind of, that's where we are in our career. So he's still hanging on to his rock star lifestyle by like a thread. And then his former bandmate has gotten married, has kids, is very, very straight laced. So they have to come together and work through their differences to perform a song that's going to save the Earth. Because if they don't prove that they're sentient and they don't come in at a certain place in the competition, the whole planet will be destroyed.
Cool. That's not intense at all.
No. There's no pressure. No. It's fine. But it's, the book is really fun because there are kind of these alternating chapters in there where you're getting sort of the backstory of all the other alien species, and she's really creative with what she does with these species, and most of them are not humanoid at all, which I really love. Like, I understand in a lot of sci-fi books that the alien species have to be humanoid for some plot to work, but she does not even care about that in this. Like, they are not even remotely humanoid in most cases. Like, the alien species that comes to tell Earth that they are going to participate is like basically a large flamingo looking thing. It's incredibly creative. It's really funny. If you like Hitchhikers, you would probably enjoy this, because it really is just sort of a love letter to Douglas Adams. And I think she does a good job, but again, be prepared when you go into it. It's not just going to be like a super easy read. She's going to make you work for it a little bit.
Yeah.
So Space Opera by Catherine Valente, and there's a sequel coming out to it. And I don't think it's the end of this year. I think it's the beginning of next year. But it's called Space Oddity.
Space Oddity.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you read it yet?
No, not yet. I have it. But I haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh, yeah, because you're my
sister. Yeah, but always ever-growing stack of books to be read.
Always. The next book I chose was Water Moon by Samantha Soto Yambao. Maybe Yambao? Y-A-M-B-A-O. This was also an ARC sent to me. It comes out in January, and it is right, like, hit the mark completely. I would definitely have picked this up off the shelf if it hadn't been sent to me. It's magical realism a little bit, a lap it. It's set in Tokyo, which I love. Mm-hmm. I was born there, by the way. And there is this pawn shop that's hidden behind a ramen shop. So you go to the ramen shop to obviously get ramen. What else would you get there? And every day there's a long line to get into it. And if you are regretting something from your past or need something taken away from you thought-wise, instead of walking into the ramen shop, you walk into this pawn shop. And you don't know the pawn shop is there. You don't even know, like, literally every character in the book who walked in was like, oh, I must have been in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. As I'm opening the door with my hands, got to get used to podcasts. And so the owner of the pawn shop has a spiel that's like, no, you're meant to be here. We're a pawn shop of regrets, and we can take away one of your regrets. And it doesn't have to be like a true regret. It could be that you were in love with somebody at some time and the memory of that person has been holding you back and you'd like to take it that away from, right? So it doesn't have to be like true regret style. And so you negotiate with the owner of the pawn shop, which is a dad, and his daughter works there also. And then when you step out of the pawn shop, once you've made your negotiations, and if the pawn shop owner thinks that your regret is worth taking, when you walk out of the pawn shop, you have no recollection of anything related to what you've given up. So you walk out, no memory of it, but they allude to later in life, like there's like maybe glimmers or shimmers that you've forgotten something, mm-hmm. but it doesn't impact your whole life.
Do you remember being in the pawn shop?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Nope. And if you do return to the ramen shop, you probably will only go into the ramen shop from now on. I feel like I vaguely remember you. It's kind of like a one-off.
Okay.
I mean, I know people have multiple regrets, but I think you can only give up one.
So the idea of this, it's not the same thing, but the feeling of it reminds me a lot of Before the Coffee Gets Cold or the Dollar Gut Dream Department Store mm-hmm. sort of thing. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Like, like cozy, but like with a little more depth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's longer than both those books.
Okay.
It's not like a little... couple over a cup of coffee and reading.
Yeah.
So you're introduced to it and then you realize it is the dad's retirement.
Okay.
And he's passing it on to his daughter and she will be the owner of the pawn shop. I almost said bookstore. pawn shop until she retires.
Okay.
And like her match has already been picked. So she already has a husband lined up. So then they do have a kid eventually, like how it's supposed to be, to take over the pawn shop. And it's just passed in this one family's stuff. And then on her first day of being the pawn shop owner, her dad's gone. And the store looks like it's been ransacked and robbed. And then walks in a scientist, and then it just takes off.
Interesting.
Wild. The world building is solid and very imaginative, and what you're actually giving up in the pawn shop is scary. I just don't want to give anything away. It was perfect. Everything that's revealed throughout the whole story is genius. And the bigger world that the pawn shop represents was very fascinating. I would love a sequel to it.
Okay.
To see how everything works in it. From where the story ends. The story ends very nicely. Like, it doesn't need or require a sequel. I would definitely read any book set within this universe, for sure. And then it just really made me want to go to Tokyo as an adult and open every ramen shop. Not that I want to give away regrets, but I want to see a secret world.
I also would like to just go to Tokyo and eat ramen. Wait. So, we can maybe work that out.
We could do that. Yeah. Maybe we need Winter or Children's Institute to be in Tokyo.
There you go. Hey, ABA, if you're listening, Winter Institute in Tokyo next year.
It'd be so much fun.
Okay, so the next one I have is actually one that Jenny and I both read because we do our FOMO book club together, which is new releases. So the book that we were reading for FOMO this month is Lies and Weddings by Kevin Kwan, which is he's the author of the Crazy Rich Asians books.
Which, have you read that series?
I have not read that series. I have only seen the movie of that, which is unusual for me. I usually don't watch movies that are based on books prior to reading the books, but I I've seen that movie,
which I liked the movie.
Yeah, I thought the movie was good, but not having read the book, I don't really know.
It's a very, very condensed version of the first one.
Okay.
Separately on its own, the movie is great. The books are just always so much better. Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. So this one is a standalone. It is not part of a series. And
not part of Crazy Rich Asians world. It's not connected to it at all.
Yeah. So it starts with kind of a flashback in 1995. There's a guy named Henry who is a very rich man from Hong Kong, but he has won a ton of money at a casino and has bought a very large diamond ring.
Very large.
Very large. To propose to the woman he loves. So he goes to a club where all of his friends are hanging out. She is there. He proposes and bedlam ensues. There's a lot of drama. Henry ends up dead. And then the story kind of skips to present day, and you move to London and you start following a very, very rich family, a part of the landed gentry in England, the Greshams. And the father is British. The mother is from Hong Kong. And they have three children. And the eldest girl is just getting ready to get married in what turns out to be kind of a disastrous wedding situation. So that's where the book starts. And then I would say, for me, the main character is Eden, or at least that's the one I was most interested in.
I think the Dr. Eden is the most interesting character because she's the most relatable.
Yeah. So she is, her father is a doctor as well, and he was best friends with Lord Greshamberry. Thomas, I believe.
Thomas is the
Is the doctor. Okay, I can't remember.
There's so many characters.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters. Anyway, so he's friends with the Lord since college. They've known each other. And so he and Eden, after Eden's mother passes away, have a cottage kind of on the larger estate that they've given them to live in. And by cottage, like, really nice house on their estate. So Eden has grown up with the children of the family. Like, she's been like a sister to them. And
with a line.
Yes.
She is kept at a distance for maybe like public events and public, and when anybody's at the house, she's not allowed to hang out because they are above her class.
And this is only kind of enforced by the mother.
Yes.
She's
a delight.
Yes, she is. She is a difficult woman. So I personally am having sort of a hard time with this book. It's almost how I felt about, if anybody read Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson, I had a hard time with that book too, because it is very much, extremely wealthy people who are just throwing money away on stupid, frivolous things. Like, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars just blowing money on all this extravagance. And then we're expected to feel bad about their problems.
No, I don't feel bad at all.
No, I mean, yes. But it's also hard to care at all about their problems because it's just so exorbitant.
It is. And just like in Crazy Rich Asians had the same things. And I think it is his thing is writing commentary on excessive wealth and excessive addiction. And
yeah,
I did not care about them. I loved it for the drama.
Oh yeah. It is chock full of drama. There's a little bit of mystery in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I liked the mystery part of it.
Yeah.
That surprisingly, and you listeners don't know me, but I am not a very good solver of mysteries. I never figure it out. I figured this one out. I was like, I called it. And then at the end, I was like, huh, look at that.
I was right.
I was right. And I don't think in his writing style, he truly kept it a secret. His little nuggets throughout made it kind of clear what the mystery, the answer to the mystery was. No, I didn't feel bad for the wealthy people. I was like, well, you did this to yourself. You were in this horrible situation because you have money problems.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like, of the mother wanting her kids to marry strictly for money and connection. And it, there was just a little uncomfortable feelings.
There were a lot of uncomfortable feelings for sure, but it didn't like stop me from finishing it.
Yeah.
Like I'm not truly a footnote reader either, but
there are a lot of footnotes in this book, strangely enough.
And he uses that device in his other books and it's perfect. And I feel like it's not him justifying what he added into the book. It's added information to help you understand the culture or just some of the words they use that, I mean, I don't speak Japanese. I would never know. Like I read every single one of them.
Yeah. There's a lot of, there's a lot of context in the footnotes to explain a lot of what's going on. And especially for like people who don't necessarily know about like huge fashion designers or like interior designers in like the, those kind of worlds. Like those are not things that I've ever paid attention to, but it was interesting in context for what the story is.
Yeah.
So I am really, really close to being finished with it. I am not finished with it yet, but I'll be finished with it by Wednesday for our book club.
So I think it will be a fun discussion because it's just so outlandish that you can't take almost anything in the book serious.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I would love to go to a wedding on a private island with a erupting volcano.
I would love to go to a wedding in hot air balloons in Morocco.
That also. Right?
Yeah.
Just so outlandish. Yeah. Imperfect. Not that I would ever have the amount of money to afford to attend or be invited.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't run in that circle.
Like, no.
Yeah.
There's some interesting things in it for sure. Okay. So the reading prompt for this month, as I talked about before, was a second chance at a DNF. So what did you do?
I read The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
So so I feel like Jenny's going to hold back on this because I love The Secret History by Donna Tartt. But
Melissa let me read her fancy 30th edition copy of it, and it really helped because the font was bigger.
Yes, it is. It is for older eyes. Yes. A nice version. Did you like it better the second time around? I mean, you did finish it, so I
did finish it. Yes.
But did you only finish it because you felt like you had to because it was for the challenge?
95% felt just that.
Okay.
But I felt like So it's broken up into book one and book two, right? And book one ends at a pretty normal spot. I liked book two better. Mm-hmm. It was less classical stuff. And maybe it's because I don't read classics. And I don't know much about the Greek mythology. My ears just popped. and maybe that's why I truly didn't connect to it. But mm-hmm. once they weren't so much in class with Julian mm-hmm. and they were panicking and freaking out and anxious and nervous, like, I did like the second part of the book better.
I think the first part of the book is a lot of setup. Like, I think it is very much, is a slow mm-hmm. build.
Yep. Yeah. A very slow build. And I think when I first tried to read it 3 years ago, I think I tried to read it in 2021. Mm-hmm. And at that point, my limit to putting a book down was 100 pages. I have since lessened to 75 pages.
You're so harsh.
I know. I am so harsh. Wait, I mean, and it still blows my mind that you've never DNF'd a book. And it is so amazing, like completely amazing.
I mean, I'm not sure if that's it, if that's for good or worse. I mean, because there are like so many books in the world that I want to read. Like, I don't know why I waste time on things that I'm not enjoying. But I just have to, if I put time into it, I need to finish it.
Yeah. And where I'm like,
done.
Off to the shelf. And I think that slow burn, I think, held me back. And even reading that first, and I didn't truly remember anything about those 100 pages. So it really was like I was reading it for the first time. It was slow. But once I got to that second part, that part of the book flew by. Mm-hmm. And it took me a solid 2 weeks to read it.
It's not a short book.
No, not at all. I am glad that I finished it and can understand why people love it so much. I just don't think it's my book.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
All right, so then next month's challenge is reading a book that's been on your TBR for more than a year. Do you know what you're reading for that?
Yes. I am reading Chakraborty's, what is the name of the book? It has a ship on the cover. She wrote City of Brass series. It's pretty. Anyways, I do know which one it is. Let me Google it real fast.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
What are you reading?
I haven't decided yet because there are so many books that have been on my TBR for more than a year. I don't know. It's going to be one of those things where I'll usually at the beginning of the month, I sort of make a stack of things that are my, like, what I'm going to read for the month and, you know, put in there like all the book club books that I have to read for mm-hmm. the month or whatever and sort of put them in order of how I think I need to read them based on how quickly I read and when I need to have things read. And I may be a little anal retentive. It really, a lot of times once I pull out the stuff that I have to read for book clubs, which August we don't have any book clubs, so I'm just going to be able to, you know, read whatever I want. It's really me going along my shelves and just pulling out things just by feeling of mm-hmm. what, and so, yeah, I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. Cause I'm not sure what I'm going to feel like.
Do you know why we're friends? It's because I'm also a planner and in January I picked out all my books for the challenge for the whole year.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Chenny. Yeah.
That happened.
I know. So it's The Adventures of Amina al-Sarafi. That's what I'm reading.
Okay. No, I knew exactly what you were talking about when you were describing it, and I knew it had L something in it, but I was like, I don't know. Yep. Like, I'm not even going to try because I have no idea. But I loved her City of Brass, like that series. Yep. Like, so
good.
Yeah, so that one has been on my shelf mm-hmm. for a while. Maybe I'll join you in that.
Oh, buddy read with it.
Maybe. What are you currently reading?
The second book in Quarter Thorns and Roses.
You can't see my face, but
I can't though. And you then I'm reading The Blackbird Oracle. That's okay. My books for this week.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not judging. I am glad Sarah J. Maas gets people reading. Mm-hmm. It's not my jam. And I've tried reading one of her books because I wanted to see what it was. It wasn't The Court of Thorn and Roses. It was her other series.
Throne of Glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. And it wasn't my thing, but I'm glad people enjoy them.
And that's why I'm reading it. There's two reasons I'm reading it. One, my mother blew through all Court of Thorns and Roses in December. And I was like, whoa.
That's a lot of pages.
Yes. And then we can't keep her books on the shelf.
Yeah,
and so,
it's true.
Like, I wanted to know.
And it's not like they're new either.
No.
Like, they've been out for a while.
Absolutely. So I wanted to know, as a bookseller, why they're flying off the shelf. And because I've had people ask, well, why are people reading this? And I couldn't give a solid answer. And
yeah.
So now I can.
Yeah.
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 What are you reading?
I am reading The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley. I haven't read anything by Lucy Foley. She's kind of been on my, like, on my radar, and I've always kind of assumed that she was similar to Ruth Ware, that sort of book, which I enjoy Ruth Ware's books. Like, they're my kind of, like, sort of easy read, kind of like low stakes thriller book that, and I usually read them using air quotes as audiobooks. Like, I use them as my books that I'm going back and forth to work. They're my commute book. So I've been listening to this one, and it does feel very Ruth Ware-ish to me. It is, like, the premise of this one is, like, there's, 9 friends who have been friends for a really long time. There's, like, 4 couples and then this one single woman, and they each year go on, like, a group trip together, like, around New Year's Eve. And so for this one, and a different one of the group plans it each time, and this one is they're at this really fancy schmancy hunting lodge in the Western Highlands of Scotland, and it's out in the middle of nowhere, and like, it's really hard to get to. If it snows, you can't get out or in. Like,
oh,
you're
gosh.
Stuck there. I mean, assume it's going to snow, right?
Right.
And it's told from multiple perspectives because you hear the voices of the different friends. You also hear the voice of the gamekeeper of the estate. And you also hear the voice of the woman who is, like, the manager of the property. And, like, very early into it, one of the guests has disappeared. The gamekeeper finds his body.
Of course.
And is fairly certain this was not an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you're kind of drawn into what, like, the underlying tension is between all of these friends, because there's always going to be, like, if it's very much a locked room mystery where you've got this group of people who are all together, something bad happens, and you need to figure out who is the psychopath. Right?
Of course. So there's one in every group.
Yeah, there's one in every group. So, yeah, it's reminiscent of, what is the Ruth Ware book where they're on, like, the hen weekend? Do you know the one I'm talking about?
What's the cover look like?
It's in a dark, dark wood.
Mm, yep.
Yeah, that one.
That cover's great.
Yeah, it is a great cover. So this is kind of similar to that vibe.
I like that. It's, like, low stakes. Mm-hmm. Mystery, which is very nice to
read. It's sort of like eating popcorn for
me.
It's like, that's what this feels like. But
I like that analogy.
Yeah, it's fine. All right. Well, I think that is all that we have.
Yeah.
Remember, if you are reading along with our reading challenge, to fill out the template, or even if you don't fill out the template, just tag it, like, because the template can be a little tricky sometimes. Just tag us in what you're reading, and everybody who completes the challenge and shares it with us is eligible to win a gift card at the end of the year. So, especially if you made it through July's, you know, reading a DNF, because that, I feel like for some people that was a big ask.
Mm-hmm.
There were some people who were good sports about it.
Yep.
So remember
it's a good challenge topic.
Yeah, to tag us in that. And we will be back next month.
Nice.
All right. Okay. Bye.